The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
From Jordan-Hare Stadium to Auburn Arena. From the plains to the recruiting trail and all points in between. If it's Auburn, we've got it covered.
Did I say War Eagle or War Eagle? That's it. War Eagle.
This is the Auburn Undercover Podcast with Brandon Marcello.
So we got Greg Williams here. He's the head coach for Auburn Equestrian. Of course, a lot of you who keep up with Equestrian, you know, you see the wins and the undefeated season in 2019. Then, of course, the follow-up with the undefeated season here in 2020 before the season was canceled, before the postseason. And you go, wow, that's great. That's awesome. And you go to Toomer's Corner and you roll the trees and celebrate. But what exactly is Equestrian? You know, there's a lot of events there, and how's it scored? How do you train for it? I think it's very interesting to kind of look into that, because I don't think we talk about it enough as sports writers, but also the fans, maybe they don't understand it quite a bit. So Greg Williams is here with us to chat about that. Greg, I guess, you know, listen, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into this, and, you know, kind of, did you ever expect it to maybe be a career for you?
Well, I got my love for horses from my mom. That's always been her passion. And so horses became a big part of my life as soon as we could get in it. And it has been my only profession as an adult. You know, showing horses and even rodeoing, both aspects are important to me. That's how my wife and I met. We were horsebacking and met at the high school rodeo finals, actually. And so we both competed. We both also showed horses. Then I made that my career. I was a professional trainer. I was still really young when I came to Auburn. I didn't intend to get out of training that early. I really enjoyed that occupation. But Auburn called, said they wanted to do something with a horse program, and would I come back? And I told my wife, I said, this job won't come open again in our lifetime. So if we're going to raise our kids in Auburn, this is the only way I can do it with horses. So we came back, and it was really running a teaching and research program, which I dearly love, and I have high aspirations to continue working with that teaching program too. The coaching came about. I had always, you know, I had clients when I was a trainer. I was still always working with kids, but college equestrian was still somewhat new. It wasn't really large, and it wasn't really on the, you know, forefront of some of the top riders in the country at the time. But we started a club team, and it quickly grew from that. And the one thing that I always studied other coaches, and I studied other sports, some of the more successful sports. And I just saw a way that I thought we could change the way that the competitions were done, where you could go head to head on the same horse and make the horse a neutral piece then, instead of having the luck of the draw. So I think if there's any one thing that I'm really proud of after starting this team at Auburn, the most important thing I've done was really creating this style of competition. And the other coaches across the country that have adapted it, and this is how we compete in the NCAA now. They've done an incredible job of continuing to grow this sport. So that's kind of how it started in a nutshell. No, to be a college coach wasn't in my plans, but it is. You talk about somebody that gets to live the dream. I'm doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible how you kind of go about something and you go into an industry and then you end up doing mm-hmm. that, but also you're part of the, not necessarily solution, but in developing it, as you just kind of mentioned, like,
maybe, yeah, yeah. How I should go about it. This way we do it. It's all brand new. So, but it was, you know, there's a lot of tremendous amount of hard work. I mean, we kind of started it from nothing. And back then I was still, just managing the horse center. I was coaching, I was still even shoeing all the horses back then for free. So it was definitely a one-man show. And now look at the staff that I've got now. There's it's going to be able to hit just some heights that I don't want to say that I never dreamed it, because I've always dreamed of it. You know, I'm always thinking of what's next and what's the possibilities. And it is, some of the really bigger dreams, though, are have come true for sure.
Now, so when you talk about developing how competition and everything and the rules are, I guess kind of explain that to the fans, exactly what went into that, what that entails, and how that's translated to today.
Well, there's another association called the IHSA. It was the only existing one at the time. And, you know, I still, like what that stands for. We even have a club team. That's what our club team competes in, is in the IHSA. I just wanted one to where you didn't have any skill levels whatsoever. You just fielded the best team you could. And also I wanted to see the riders go head to head on the same horse, and just to equal the playing field. And it's still, it's extremely hard to win on the road, because the home team has the home horse advantage. They know the horses. And, I liken it to be like shooting basketballs or something. If you know the home team knows what kind of basketballs they're using, they practice with that size ball, all of a sudden you get there and you've still got to make it happen, even though it's something you're not used to playing with, or different golf clubs and things like that. So everywhere they go, they got to be used to playing with the unknown, and I think that's something that's been a testament to what we've done with the coaches, Coach Manili and Coach Braswell, is really trying to find the players that are best suited to be able to do that can ride anything. I mean, they're like mini professionals.
So, yeah, go into that a little bit, because even my brief understanding of it, when you go on the road, you're using other horses. That just seems almost impossible to me, because of, like, the relationships you develop with the horses you have
at
home.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, it's only a 4-minute warm-up, and I've got a lot of the parents of some of my riders are professionals. And, it's really fun to talk to them. It was just in California this year. I was talking to one of those, and I said, does it not amaze you every time what your daughter and her friends do? And he was just, oh, my God. He said, I mean, there just aren't many professionals that can get this done on a consistent basis like they do. But, you know, in addition to their competing on their own, this is what they train for every day at Auburn, is we have the ability to ride a lot of different horses. So they're constantly – and these horses are pretty tough too. I mean, you know, typically when you get horses donated, they're at kind of the end of their career. They're maybe either burnt out, or they have an injury that we can work through, but you can't do it, you know, when they're having to compete all the time. You know, we are the rescue program for ex-show horses, I like to say. So we give them a great job. They get to be in a semi-retirement, but still have a purposeful life, and have 40 girls that love all over them all the time as well. So it is amazing how that they can go on the road and do what they do. And having been been a professional myself, it amazes me still just to watch what they get done.
So how many horses do you guys have, and what's the upkeep like with that? And as you mentioned, you know, I guess there's some of them are donated. How did you guys go about that? And mm-hmm. like you said, sometimes you get horses that are injured and everything, and you have to work through that. I mean, there's so much that goes into that I'm not even aware of.
Right. Well, everything that we get is donated. I mean, that's one of the things that's, important to us, that we have to be cost affordable. And that's something across the country. If you look at the teams, because we have an industry base behind us, that does a lot of donations, a lot of people don't realize that, per head athletes, we're usually the second or third most cost-effective sport, next to like football at universities. But it's because we have an industry behind us. It's a unique industry, brings in a new unique set of donors. Those unique set of donors are also the ones that donate these horses. So we're very dependent, on those as well. We have a unique situation here is that we use one group of horses that we have for our NCAA team, for our IHSA team, and our teaching program, and a new program we're working on forming with the vet school is this sports medicine program. So we have about 60 horses that can cover all those programs. So that also allows us to do a lot of effective cost sharing in that as well.
Upkeep's got to be incredible for the staff, right? I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's something like right now when we've got these shutdowns university wide, that place doesn't. It runs 365 days a year. And so I've got an incredible team out right now, and I'd love to give a shout out to Lisa Dorsey and Katie Renfro and Jay Baker right now for what they're doing. Plus I've got two student workers out there that are working with them, and we're trying to stay away right now as coaches, which is a little bit of a guilt feeling that you can't be out there helping them. But I said, right now we got to keep two crews. One of them's got to be healthy. So we're trying to keep all coaches away. So if something happens to our horse center crew and they get sick, then we will move in and start taking care of the horses.
You'll get back to your old days of having to do it.
I know. I know they'd all look at me and say, yeah, at least one, we weren't doing it now. But I can figure it back out pretty quick. I actually did. I had a lot of fun during Christmas. I went out there and cleaned stalls and stuff. That's what I did on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, was just help work out at the barn. And my wife and I out there doing that, we said it was just a lot of fun for us.
Obviously, there's a lot of – you have to have a lot of love for the animals and all of that. What's it like for yourself and the girls year to year being around these horses and trying to develop a relationship with them and the trust factor and everything?
Well, I think that's something – to be at this level, it's just, they've all got it. I mean, it's ingrained in them and they can't help it. It's like being addicted to a drug or something. That if you've got the horse bug, when I do a lot of camps and clinics, I get to talk to the parents and I say, I know some of you think, what on earth has happened to my daughter? And I said, the only thing I can tell you is they can't help it. You see, a lot of kids get involved with – most people like horses. And Will Rogers always had one of the best statements, outside of horses, good for the inside of a man. And I think those of us that have this affinity for horses, that's what it is. Your life doesn't feel complete if you're not around them somehow. And even though I don't even ride anymore, I think one day I'll probably get back into riding for fun, but it's just the being around it. It's something I have to have in my life. And so these girls feel the same way. They're not just driven to compete. They're driven to be around horses.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Now, we hear some of the events, like raining and all that.
Right.
Go through the events and what exactly those entail. How they're scored, because I still don't understand how they're scored, how many people score and all that. Is there a home advantage to that? Or is it just because of the different horses that maybe you go, okay, we're going to have some, quirks here and there. But explain, I guess, the events, the scoring system, how that all came about, how it's transformed and kind of, I guess, when you go out there day to day, do you know what kind of to expect based off your performance, or is it still a lot subjective, like you see in, say in ice skating, for example, or even gymnastics?
Right. Well, talking to the gymnastics coaches, sometimes I don't think we're as subjective as theirs is, but, I guess it depends on how you feel. Certainly there are some judges that I feel like can't get some biases out of the way maybe, but you know, for the most part, the best rider wins usually. And it, you do have human error, and it would probably take away the flow and fun of it if you video reviewed everything. There's, of course, a lot of things that if you could show a judge a video of it again, yeah, they would pick up more penalties and things. But you just kind of go with what you've got in that. But there are two disciplines. There's what we always called is hunt seat equitation. Now the U.S. United States Equestrian Federation has asked us to refer to that as jumping seat equitation now. So that's new for us this year. We're trying to get used to that term, but it's kind of their Olympic tracking is what they're using that class for, is jumping seat. So you hear that, it's not that the event hasn't changed, it's just the name of it. But so in our jumping seat equitation, we have over fences and on the flat. The over fences is something that you know, people think naturally, well, they're going to jump, as long as they don't knock the rails down, then they're being scored the same. But no, they're actually still being judged. How they get that horse to leave the ground, how it lands, how it tracks to the next fence, it's got to do it in the exact number of strides. I mean, so there's a lot going on. And the most amazing part about our sport, if you know it, and most confusing part if you don't, is everything is going great as long as you can't see any work being done. And so right. Yeah. It's kind of like a duck on the water. You know, they may be paddling like heck underneath, but they got to make it look easy. So that's when you see them, you come out, they're actually out of breath because they're trying to move around a pretty tough horse through a lot of these courses. So that's the over fences is judged, and it's a score that we use United States Equestrian Federation judges, and they score that just like they would in the industry, is you know, what they think that score should be. The equitation on the flat, they judge each maneuver from a score of 0 to 10, and so then that's a cumulative score in the end. Then you move over to the Western events. The Western events are, you know, the cowboy hats, shaps, and you know, bigger saddles with a saddle horn on it. There's two events in that. The reining, which looks almost like figure skating on a horse. It's got the fast run downs, the sliding stops, fast spins. Then the horsemanship, which is it's also a pattern as well, but it's just done in a lot slower gaits. So both of the reining and the horsemanship is you start with a basic score of 70, and you go +1 and 1.5. You can go up to +1.5 for a maneuver, down to -1.5 for a maneuver, but you can do 0 or +0.5 or -0.5 or whatever. And by the end, so you're basing it off the score of 70. And in the end, with how many pluses you've got or how many minus you've got, plus any penalty deductions, that's your score. So, you know, most of the decent rides are going to be, you know, inching up around the 75 mark on horsemanship, and, you know, probably around 72 or so for the 72, 73 on the reining. The penalties, it's a long assessment of penalties that you can get. So that part would matter. And the other thing I encourage people to do too is we love to talk about our sport. So you can find parents, you can even find parents on the other team. Anybody would love to tell you what's going on. And that is one of the fun things to do, is when they're showing exactly what the horse is doing before they do it. And then you realize every one of those movements, every time they change leads, every time they land a certain way after every fence, the rider's telling them to do that. So that does help a lot if somebody will show you in real time what's going on.
So last season, you guys went undefeated. First team, I believe, in college history to go undefeated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Won yet another national championship. This year, you guys were undefeated going into the SEC championships, but of course, with the threat and the spread of the coronavirus, that was canceled. The entire postseason was canceled, like everything else. I'm sure there's disappointment. What was that like, and what was it like for the girls, you know, having to chat with them about all that?
Well, it's disappointing. I mean, I felt like, yeah, you know, last season I said this was the strongest team that I thought had ever been assembled in our sport. And this year's team was performing even better. I mean, I have never felt as confident as I did going into this postseason. So, yeah, it was kind of devastating on that part. I hated not being with them. I mean, you know, we weren't together when all this happened. So that part was really disappointing. But I don't think any of us lost sight. Pretty early, we just realized there's bigger problems going on. So, you know, you know, I hope these girls get, you know, recognition for what they accomplished, but we'll worry about that later. there's just too big of issues to even for us to focus, I think, on ourselves and all the girls I talked to. It's sure they wanted to ride more. I mean, that's what we do, and we really wanted, as good as we were, we really wanted those rides to get to play out. But I just feel like I think the bigger issues just have dominated our thought process.
So I've always wanted to know, how do you guys come up with the names for the horses? You know, I hear Waffle and all these great names.
Most of them are called by their barn names. Like when we get them donated, you know, they'll have a barn name. Most horses have a registered name and then kind of a barn name. And typically we try to keep them what they are when they're donate them, just whatever the people that donate them called them. There, every now and then there'll be a name that we just don't feel like we can live with, and the girls will change it to something. But typically we just use what they're donated as.
What are the most creative names you've come across in your career?
You know, I think some of my favorites are actually the names of some of the show horses. They also have barn names, but they also have show ring names. They don't have to be introduced in the show ring. And, you know, some of them you can tell that the dad's had a hand in it. I've seen a lot of these at the shows, like There Goes My Lake Home. It's one of the ponies' names. Typically, you know, when an announcer says, they'll say, now entering the ring is Greg Williams riding Ontari or something like that. And so a friend of mine named called his horse Like an Idiot. So that every time he was showing it, he says, man, his name's Mark Reichert. He said, now entering the ring is Mark Reichert riding like an idiot. So that one still stands out as my favorite.
That's great. That's awesome. So for the folks that are listening and watching, if they want to learn more about the sport and follow it, what do you kind of suggest that they do?
Well, we're actually hoping to put together kind of a follow-up with this. I mean, you know, this what you're doing right now is we want to probably put something together that we can have maybe on the video board, maybe on our website, not just in words, but actually have some little video descriptions of what's going on. Still the most important thing is to come out. The reason I feel like we get the big crowds isn't because they understand everything about horses. It's just, we just want it to be a fun atmosphere for kids. Yeah. You know, we want to have the horseback rides. We want it to be fun family events. And, I'm an Auburn kid. You know, I did a lot of growing up here, so this was moving home for me. And, that's the biggest thing I remember. You know, our athletes come to our schools, but just programs that went on. And so I really just want our girls to give back like that, because I know what it's like to be a kid in Auburn. And it just means so much to the families. If you can make it fun for their kids, you're taking care of the families.
So how many national championships you got in you?
I don't know. I had this one this year. I felt like that was so. Yeah. I feel like we can be good for a while, because we really a lot is because we had to. I've been blessed with a lot of good coaches around me at Auburn that let me pick their brains all the time. I study, because if you look at all the history and if you just followed all the tracings of all the great coaching wisdom that goes down to each one of these coaches here through the years, I just tried to fast forward that into our sport, you know? So I pick their brains like crazy. So I feel like the culture that we've got, is going to be sustainable for a while. Got an incredible staff, and this town and university are great for the sport. I mean, most of the people, really, they're from all over the country and really didn't know much of anything about Auburn, but when they come and they see it, they fall in love with it. So it's a great fit for our sport.
Great. Greg Williams, thank you so much for doing this for us, teaching us a little bit and sharing some stories. And you know, people see, oh, wow, they're undefeated and all that. But, you know, I know people get to go to some of these events, but I know a lot of our readers and readers across the country just maybe don't quite understand it. They just think someone gets on a horse, jumps over a fence, as you said, and, you know, okay, they didn't knock the bar down, so they're winning. There's a lot that goes into it, and it's a beautiful sport, you know, to watch. And I recommend to anybody that if you haven't gone out, or you need to go check it out, because it's really a beautiful sport to watch.
No one has it covered like 24/7 Sports. Go undercover with Auburn Undercover.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.